Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hung up by Merson, in comes Linnegan on the far side. Well, David O'Leary gets himself and the ball out of the net. And Arsenal are in front.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Lockdown, brought to you by Lavazza. This week's interviewee made more appearances for the club than any other player in history. David O'Leary's incredible Arsenal career spanned 20 seasons, during which time he racked up no fewer than 722 games. At the end of today's episode, we'll bring you details of next week's show, as well as reminding you how you can subscribe and leave reviews and ratings. So yeah, as I say, David, usually we do a career reflective in these in lockdown interviews, but your career is so long that we would never get through it all. We'd be here all day. So instead, we wanted to reflect on how football is, how it changed over the course of your playing days, because obviously you spanned 20 years at Arsenal. So let's go back to the very beginning. 1973, was it, when you signed as an apprentice?
I signed in 73, and it's funny, I laugh at... when you go around the stadium, David O'Leary, 18, you know, has me 75, I think, in the stadium. I signed and joined Arsenal in 73. But I'd played already before I was pro, you could say, in the team and that. So I came and signed in the May of 1973. And I actually finished that cup final the May 1993, if you remember, the second replay of the Sheffield Wednesday FA Cup final. So it was exactly 20 years before Arsenal sussed me out and kicked me out.
Let's go back. As you say, you were 17. You made your debut. Very young for a defender as well. Did you feel ready at the time? Did you have any self doubt at all, or were you full of that sort of teenage confidence that you have?
I was 17 in the May, and it's August, so you're just, you know, a few months in, so you're very young, 17-year-old. And Peter Simpson was injured, and I think maybe a couple of others who could have filled in there. And they felt like I could play. Was I shocked? Yes. You know, I was expecting... maybe towards the end of that season, if I did well through the season, that I might get a debut or something. You never know like that. So I wasn't expecting it. And I was absolutely delighted to get it. And I had a lot of nice people who helped me. You know, Pat Rice, who's still a great friend there, played it. People like Sammy Nelson. Terry Mancini was great to play alongside as a young person there to help. The great Liam Brady was in front there. Many Eddie Kelly, Alan Ball. So there was many good people, George Armstrong. It was a tough game. I was back with the club there to Burnley. And anytime I go back, I kind of reminisce to myself, it all started here. And the ground really hasn't changed much in any way. And I can always remember probably a few things. Bertie May bringing my dad in. To the kind of the dressing room afterwards. I never knew he was there, and it was typical classy Arsenal to get him over and see me make my debut. So I was absolutely delighted that I could share that with him.
When you were told, before, was it the night before the game? Can you remember? When did you know that you were about to make your debut?
Oh, I got told on the day before we left to drive up to Burnley, you know, in the training session at London Coney. I wasn't a person that got very nervous before games. Yes, you had an edge about you, but was I a person that couldn't sleep the night before games, anything else? No, I had a good night's sleep. I got up, probably realised really on the Saturday morning more than the, you know, on the being told on the Friday morning before you went out to train that you were playing. And, you know, on the coach up, the same thing. It probably really, really hit me on the Saturday in the team meeting to say, yeah, you're going to make your debut. You're actually going to play for Arsenal Football Club here. I presume, you know, play one game or a couple of games and that'd be it. But I think I played the first 40 games of that season before I got injured, which I look back now and I can't believe that was possible.
No, it does seem, I mean, it's obviously very unusual for a player of that age to come in and just then keep his place in the team. Did you feel like you were learning on the job, or did you feel ready?
Yeah, and people were kind of, Bertie Mead kept saying to me, are you feeling okay? You're tired or anything else? And I was going, no, I feel fine. I don't think they could believe it either. And they were trying to check out, was I okay? You're still feeling well? Because I seem to be getting better as the more games I played without sounding that. I wasn't getting tired or looking tired. But I think I got a hamstring injury at the very end of the season because of fatigue, if you know what I mean. Yes, I felt I felt a little bit weary at the very end of that first season. But I thought to myself, God, I've enjoyed this. I've liked this. I've played with good people who looked after me well. It was a very tough league to be involved in. A very physical league in those days at that position compared to what it is now, and but got through it, and I was immensely proud that the amount of games I got through that season.
Yeah, so you established yourself really quickly as part of the first team and as an important part of the team. What was it like as a young professional footballer at the time? Was it a glamorous profession back then? Because obviously we look at all the glamour that surrounds the Premier League. Back in the mid-70s, how different was it?
Oh, the game has changed completely. You had, as an apprentice growing up, you had your duties to clean, to clean the dressing rooms, to clean the football boots. All that type of stuff was expected of you, and it was par for the course. Did it do me any harm? No, I think it was good for me and good for anybody that did do that. Now, good God, everything is done, at such a young age. I think you're awarded far too quick at a young age now. What can you do about that? As I say, Arsenal was a great club to grow up in. You know, I look at Saka we have coming through here and I think to myself, I think you'll go on and be a really top player for this club. And I'm delighted to see his progress through, because it's somebody I've had an eye on for quite a while. I think he's a lovely person with it. And I'm so proud that somebody like him has come through the ranks of Arsenal. I hope he'll stay for a long time and keep improving.
Yeah, and there's much more awareness now that when a lad of Bukayo's age, for example, does get thrust into the spotlight, there's a lot that goes with it. When you look back at yourself, 17, 18, playing for Arsenal every week, who did you have looking out for you?
I had really good, solid professional people in the club. People like Terry Mancini, even, who couldn't believe at his late stage in life that he was playing for Arsenal Football Club. And there were so many good professionals there. Plus what you had is, you know, Bobby Campbell is the coach there. Bertie Mee was a great, great person as well that looked after you. So the whole club wrapped around you really, really well. And there's so many people you had to thank really there.
And we spoke to Kevin Campbell recently, who said that when he was a young player at the club, it was always drilled into him from an early age what it means to play for Arsenal, what's expected of you, the privilege, the responsibility you have. Did you have that? Was that around as well in the 70s?
I was a lad from, came over from Dublin at 15. My parents, I was born over here. My parents worked in North London around that area. My dad supported Arsenal. And I knew how proud he was. I was delighted that I came. They moved back to Dublin. I ended up coming back over to London and ended up playing at Arsenal. And they were so proud of me for that. I knew I was playing at an absolute great club. I'd gone on trial to Man United and had a fantastic time there. But when I came down then to Arsenal for a trial, I just clicked with them. That for all Man United were really good and I had a really great week there, there's something different about Arsenal. And I'm so glad I got that right, because I was never disappointed. I knew I'd made the right decision. And as I say, somebody that said to me, I was a lad that joined in 73 and I'd done 20 years there and I'd have played the most games and everything else. I thought I'd have had them locked up probably. But as I say, no, so proud. And to say that you're still involved in the club, if somebody had said to me, you know, 45 years later, you're still driving people mad around the club, I'd have thought, good God. So, you know, very, very lucky. But people go on about my 20 years there. As you know, make you feel like it was must have been tough. It wasn't. 20 years playing for Arsenal. You can't believe your luck.
It's incredibly unusual. I mean, we spoke about Arsene Wenger as a manager doing 22 years, but for a player to do it, were there any times when you thought, I need to move on? I wonder what it's like. You know, is the grass greener elsewhere?
Look, there was a few times that you see people moving. You see Liam move to Italy. You seen Frank Stapleton go to Manchester United, and I was getting offered similar opportunities. At certain times through it, there was a brief of thinking, but no. Ken Fryer always knew. Anytime there was a contract come round, I always had the pen in my hand ready to sign, if you know what I mean. Maybe a couple of times when we were not playing so well and we were getting a bit bogged down, and you think to yourself, God, do you need a change or anything? But I never said it to people, but I had an ambition to do 20 years at the club. I remember finishing, again, not going out publicly or that, of there was a couple of things I remember at the time, and everybody was celebrating. I remember people after I'd done 10 years there and they were saying, oh, how good and how quickly it had gone. And I thought to myself, I think the way the position I play in, I think the way I'm lucky with injuries, the way I keep myself fit, that I can do another 10 here. And I was quite determined to do that. And the other thing I wanted to do on a private ambition was, I remember getting playing 600 games for Arsenal and people saying, like, you're up now with, say, George Armstrong, who went into the 600. I had something in my head that just said to myself, well, I want to go into the 700s and have somebody say to me, nobody in the Arsenal history has ever gone into the 700s. And I had that drove me on as well as a private ambition to do.
It's incredible ambition, isn't it, to set yourself that sort of target. So when you did eventually break the record, it's Geordie's record that you took, of course, who played in your debut.
Yeah.
Your 622nd game would have been the record. So that was something that you had targeted, something you had earmarked. And so to get to that day, it must have been a very special.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not kidding, I remember coming home that night feeling so proud and how the club honoured me with the presentation and everything else. But I remember saying to my wife, I want to play 700 games. And she said, you're mad. We'd only enjoy them. But I said, no, I won't say that out or put myself under pressure. The pressure will put is it'll be in my own head. And when I achieve it, I'll be able to say to myself, you've set yourself something you wanted to do that, you know, it wasn't a goal that was set out to let everybody know. And that was very, very nice when I played that 700 game, that I'd set myself something myself that I wanted to do. And it was kind of the same thing at Wembley in that cup final against Sheffield Wednesday, of coming down the steps with the cup and that. And I was thinking, I'm 20 years here now this month. That's another thing I wanted to do. And how lucky am I celebrating it by winning the FA Cup as well? And that was a private thing I had. And the way it worked out, that your eldest say would celebrate 20 years, but your eldest celebrated by winning the FA Cup. And I think, as I say, a little bit earlier in that same year, we beat Sheffield Wednesday in the Coca-Cola. And, you know, there are little private things that your eldest saying to your head, congratulate yourself on.
Yeah, because it's one thing to have a 20-year career, but to do it at the top, to play for and to win trophies throughout that time, you know, under Terry Neill, then again under George Graham. You had to keep improving, didn't you, to stay at that level?
Well, as long as I looked after their gardens well for them, all their gardens were maintained and their cars were well washed and cleaned and everything else. So kept them all sweet. But look, that was the thing with Arsenal, it was good. I enjoyed the pressure as well. That's what got you there, was that you had to keep performing if you wanted to survive at Arsenal Football Club. And it kept you being consistent. Now, I've seen a lot of really good players come and couldn't cope with the expectation of a big club. And I always even say now, people who are, you know, when you buy a player, you've got to suss his mentality as well of, can he come and deliver week in, week out? Because the big clubs, it's about that. Not doing it, have one great game and then rest on your laurels for a few. It's, you perform, the game was over, you move on, and you're expected to perform for the next game. And that keeps you on your toes at the big clubs. Certain people who, through no fault their own, who are good players, can cope with that mentality. And it takes that, it takes a special player to play at the Man Uniteds, to play at the Arsenals, to play at the Liverpools, to have that expectation thrown on them week in, week out. And that's, it's not just about buying a player for the club if you're going to, for those type of clubs. You've got to really try and understand their mentality, or can they cope with that pressure and expectation?
And I want to ask you about how much football changed almost around you while you were playing, because I guess it was a gradual change for you. You don't really notice season from season. But if you look back, you know, when you started, it was still 2 points for a win. Goal average, I think, was still being used in your first season rather than goal difference. The commercialization of football, we didn't even have a JVC, I don't think, come until a bit later. And then obviously the stadium changes a bit later with all-seaters. What did you think were the big changes while you were playing? And did you notice it, or was it more of a gradual thing for you?
No, there was change. I mean, when JVC went on our front of our jerseys, that was like, good God, you know, we never thought we'd ever see anything like that on an Arsenal jersey, and commercials and the way they came in. Amazing. I think the game... there's a lot of good things that's come and there's a lot of bad things. I think the good things from the days of progressing through was, I think the 1 point and the 3 point thing is good. I think it rewards you to go out and try and attack and win a game because the reward is there. I like that idea. I like the idea of when it came of not the slowness of passing it back, killing the game off, letting the goalkeeper pick it up. That way was, if you look back at the old games, the game becomes so ploddy and you could run the clock down doing that type of thing. I think of, you know, I look at the battles, and particularly the skillful players, the midfield players, the wingers, the way they used to get kicked up in the air and nobody got a yellow card for it or anything, a booking. You probably had to nearly assassinate the person before you got a yellow card. And I think that's been great, that the defenders have had to be more defenders instead of being so crude, and the skillful players are being let show their skills off amazingly better and being protected. Against that, I think the things I totally dislike is the way the players go down so easily now. It's frightening. That's an absolute thing that drives me mad. The way they feign injuries is absolutely shocking. The other thing that drives me mad, if you want to take it really up to date now, is the VAR. I sit in the stand now when Arsenal score a goal, and I think to myself, God, I jump up now, and I tend to not jump up anymore now because I think...
scared to celebrate.
I'm scared to celebrate. I cannot believe fingernails are, when we, you know, to disallow goals. I just think that is just not right of that way. It's too fine a margin of that. I was all for it, but at the moment I think it's just ruining the instant reaction. That's the part that's, you know, when we were talking about it coming in, we never talked about that part, and it's killed that part off because we just wait, we look, oh, can we celebrate of it? Is it going to be taken away? I like the idea of, though, if somebody's done something vicious to somebody else, or that's you can be punished for it because you should be punished for it. But as I say, on the goal part of it, I've been very disappointed. I think it's ruining the game personally.
So what would you say was your favourite era to play in? If you could go back to one season and you thought, yeah, this is how football should be.
Favourite era to play in? I think as the game was going on, in the later times, the game was getting better and better. So For all I enjoyed all the years, I think the years of when I was finishing was probably the best years, because I think the things that were getting implemented were only going to be better for the game.
And so that was the Premier League era was your last season at Arsenal. I know you carried on after that, but was that a big change, do you think, a big shift? It's sort of that's when the showbiz came in, isn't it?
I don't think you could put any better. That's when the showbiz came in, and that's when footballer started to become, instead of back page stuff, creeping onto the front pages of newspapers in ways, and it become very celebrity. And then the thing that has changed the ballpark just unbelievably is the money side of things. You know, when Arsene Wenger, I remember him saying to me about when he came to Arsenal, you know, there was one player on by far the highest money, say, and you thought that was extraordinary. But now that's per year, that person now, there's people earning far more than that per week, if you know what I mean. That's how the game has changed ridiculously. I think the game has swung far too much to the player. I think it was totally the other way. Not the players' faults, the money's, you know, good luck to them.
So do you think the game has changed more since you retired or during your career? In those 20 years when you played, more than 20 years after Arsenal as well, were the changes as drastic then as they have been since?
I think the most noticeable has been since I retired. I think there's been a lot of radical changes since then. Like, the science and the football side of things has gone immensely. I feel the players are more delicate now than when I was.
yes, I know what you mean.
I think they're, because we've got that many gurus behind the scenes, you know, sports scientists, they have assistants. Then there's psychologists, they have assistants. There's so many other people involved in the football side now. And I think the player themselves get involved with all these at such a young age that they're brought up into a way of they've got to be highly tuned and totally right to play. I wonder, would I have played so much under this new regime, or I might have played a double amount of games under this regime, the amount of things that, you know, are given to benefit you, to get you. But I don't know whether as well as that, are the players programmed into you've got to be totally right before you can play stuff.
So what do you think will happen? You mentioned Bukayo Saka earlier, starting out at the start of his journey. Imagine him doing this interview in 20 years' time when he's looking back on his career. Do you think it will come to a point where we sort of start to roll back on a few of these things?
I think the only way we're going to roll back is if, you know, the tumble dryer stops spinning with all this amount of cash in it. You know, what drives it forward is TV money, which is, you know, where it was in my day. It was creeping up to where it's gone. You know, Sky getting involved in BT, and you see the Premier League rights around the world. To me, that's the only time if those people don't want football, you'll get a correction in it financially. But who's to say then if those people pop out, the Amazons and somebody else come in and take it to the other next level again? On it. So I cannot see it slowing down for the time being. I just really can't. I think that, you know, the stadiums are getting fantastic. I just feel in my own right that once we get over COVID and we settle back after a couple of years, we'll go back again into another cycle of probably madness.
Okay, we can just finish this section by talking about your record. We did touch on it, that game against Norwich at Highbury, which was a crazy game as well in itself, wasn't it? Was it 4-3 in the end?
Crazy game, and I thought to myself, good God, what a game, what a way to celebrate your day, all right. Absolutely mad, exciting, great atmosphere.
And you scored as well.
Well, yeah, good God. I was deadly from about 2 yards out. That was my forte, definitely. And it was all happening. It was a great atmosphere. You know, Highbury gave you that. It was very enclosed. A lot of people were involved. I mean, when I started off, you know, it was 56,000 for some of those games that way. And it was, you know, we think people remember a bit now. And that game was 38,000, I think, at the Norwich game. But I remember when there was nearly 20,000 more in there, and the atmosphere was just unbelievable in the place. Absolutely unbelievable. the night football, the atmospheres in it were just amazing. You look up at that North Bank and the amount of people in it was just phenomenal. And as I said, they used to nearly suck the ball into the net for us at times at that end.
So tell us about the that game as well. What are your memories? We mentioned you scored, and then I think it was a comeback, wasn't it, for Arsenal for Lee Dixon to score in the injury time, and then it all kicked off in the goal net, didn't it?
Yeah, I think there was pushing and shoving handbags of, you know, at 10 yards and everything else. I think it was a bit about nothing really in general, but it was the intensity of the match and the atmosphere and, you know, scoring the goals, the whole lot made a very intense match and exciting match and a lively match. It was just a great way to finish off a really great day.
You also mentioned the cup final, the replay against Sheffield Wednesday in 93. Just tell us about, so you obviously, you knew, did you, that it would be your last game going into it? How are those conversations taking place with George Graham?
George was a great manager, but he didn't kind of take any prisoners. Of his attitude was, yeah, you've done 20 great years at Arsenal, but there's no sympathy there. It's time to move on. You know, we believe that you've done your time for us, and that was his attitude. George was no sympathy thinking we'll give you another year, or give you another 2 years. If I'd have been offered that. Do I think I could have done more at the... Yes. Was I a bit disappointed that you weren't offered another contract? Yes. Because I think I could have still had a role, or not to play maybe as many games, but even to help out with the reserves and be there fit and ready if the club need... Like in many ways of, if you can remember what Ryan Giggs and the Paul Scholes were used in their later life at Manchester United, if you know what I mean. But I was very appreciative of George of letting me know, explaining to me. And I had, as I say, a few months to look forward to, you know. And I said to myself as well, one thing, I'd hated being told that after 19 years, nobody'd have known, but at least I knew I was achieving some personal ambition in my own head of the other thing I wanted to do was do 20 years at the club.
You wouldn't have wanted to stay out of sympathy anyway. You were there on merit your whole career.
You couldn't have put it better. And I thought that as well. If I don't want to simply vote or to get another year's contract because you've done 20 at the club. No, I think since I've left, I think a few of them have been handed out at the club all right over the last few years in ways. But George wasn't that type, and I wouldn't have wanted that way. And the last game, Wembley was always... is a brilliant place if you win. And, you know, I remember that Man United game, the way we won there, and the ending and the whole lot. The winning was amazing against Sheffield Wednesday. But when I came down the steps that night and walked around, and the fans were... when you win, it's great to share with your fans because you know how much that means to them as well. It all of a sudden hit me that in about 100 yards... time, I'll be going down that tunnel and taking that jersey off, and it'll be for the last time. And so it was a very mixed emotion. It hit me going around the stadium afterwards of saying, David, in a couple of minutes time, you'll be finished back into that dressing room, and that jersey is going to come off, and you've been putting that jersey on for this great club for 20 years, and you're not going to be able to put it on for any longer after this. So I'd mixed emotions in the dressing room about that.
Yeah, I bet. Huge change in your life, David. Thanks so much for your time today. I really enjoyed it. As I say, we could go on forever. There's so many highlights in your career, but I really appreciate your time.
No trouble. It's a pleasure. Thanks for asking me, and wish you well. Stay safe, and please God, we'll get back to normal time soon.
Our thanks to David for his time today, and there's more to come next week. We couldn't end the interview without asking him about his famous penalty for Ireland in the 1990 World Cup. So we'll be releasing a bonus episode next week in which David relives that remarkable moment in his country's history. To make sure you don't miss it, you can subscribe to In Lockdown via your usual podcast provider. If you could take the time to leave a rating and review as well, that would really help us out. Thanks again to our partners at Lavazza. Remember, if you're in the UK, you can purchase your favourite coffee at lavazza.co.uk. So we'll be back next Tuesday with more from David O'Leary. Until then, thanks for listening.